Hey, I'm Ryan Reynolds.
At Mint Mobile, we like to do the opposite of what Big Wireless does. They charge you a lot, we charge you a little. So naturally, when they announced they'd be raising their prices due to inflation, we decided to deflate our prices due to not hating you. That's right. We're cutting the price of Mint Unlimited from $30 a month to just $15 a month.
Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
$45 up front for 3 months plus taxes and fees. Promo rate for new customers for limited time. Unlimited more than 40 gigabytes per month slows. Full terms at mintmobile.com.
This episode of Politics Without the Boring Bits is sponsored by BT, because BT means business. BT knows that businesses come in many shapes, sizes, and guises, from the person just starting out at their kitchen table to the biggest employer, which is why no matter what line of work you're in, they've got your back to help you succeed and do what you do best. No doubt connectivity is a must in Westminster, and it certainly helped us to get this episode created and distributed to you listening right now. BT already connects more than 1 million businesses and public sector organisations, offering secure and reliable connectivity. Nearly three quarters of people running a business or side hustle feel they couldn't do so without reliable broadband and mobile connectivity. That's why having connectivity you can count on is a must for business, whether it be facilitating multiple devices being connected at once or making team calls or guest Wi-Fi access for customers. BT's connectivity helps keep you and your customers happy. Whatever your business, BT's got your back. Search BT's got your back.
Hello, this is the Red Box Podcast. I'm Matt Jolly. Before I tell you what's coming up on today's episode, would you like a shout out on Christmas Day? Yes, on Christmas Day, I'm doing a special show on Times Radio with Mariella Fostrom. It's Matt and Mariella's Selection Box, where we're going to pick through some of the weirder things that have happened on our shows in this year. But we're going to be on at 10 o'clock on Christmas morning, so we want to basically say hello to you. So if you're putting the turkey in, taking the dog for a walk, peeling the carrots, whatever it might be, if you want us to say hello to you on the radio, just get in touch with me now. You can email me, matt.shawley@times.radio. Who are you? What will you be doing? Who do you want us to say hello to? And we'll say happy Christmas to you on Christmas Day. matt.shawley@times.radio. Get in touch. Right, coming up on today's episode, it's Wednesday, so it must be PMQs Unpacked. It's the last PMQs of 2021. Patrick McGuire joined me to pause the action live and analyse in real time what was going on in the House of Commons. Nobody mentioned the fact that Patrick and I 2 weeks ago weren't quite sure if the Downing Street party story had got legs. Occasionally we get things wrong. Right, that's coming up in just a moment. But first, it's Wednesday, so our columnist panel must be Crampon. It's Robert Crampton and Alice Thompson.
Now, I was thinking that Crampon is pretty bad, but Matt surely does. The rhyming goes with poorly, which is not that good.
And did that other one say politics and cheese?
Yes.
Right.
Without the wine and sleeves. So I've taken it to mean the cheese that was being served in number 10 and not in any way suggesting this show is cheesy.
Yeah, that's kind of what I was objecting to. Because we're not cheesy, are we, at all?
No.
No, not remotely. Right.
But our New Year's resolution is to find something better than Crampon, because I think Crampon may be cramping our style, don't you think?
Yeah.
Yes. Well, I'm happy. If somebody wants to come up with a better portmanteau for Alice Thompson and Robert Crampton, you carry on. get in touch in the usual ways. Yeah. Now, let's talk about Boris Johnson. Why not? It goes from bad to worse. The rebellion last night, so almost 100 MPs defying the whip to vote against the government on COVID passes. We've got an interview coming up a little later, Mark Harper, one of the ringleaders. He chairs the COVID recovery group, former chief whip. He's saying Boris Johnson must change. Alice, is there any prospect of Boris Johnson changing?
I think very little, I have to say. Well, apart from he'll probably become more disorganised and more tired because he has got a tiny baby and a toddler in the flat, and he is going to be pretty exhausted, I'd have thought, soon. And he looked, you know, when he addressed the nation earlier this week, he looked absolutely shattered already. So the only thing I would say is it may become even more shambolic in the next few weeks.
And people don't change, do they, Robert? That's part of the problem, particularly when you get to Boris Johnson's time of life. He's not suddenly going to become one of life's great administrators.
No, he's not. I mean, I think he might pretend to change. There's the guy on, I think it was the 1922 committee guy, former chairman of the 1922 committee, I think, who was saying he got to consult the party more. It's a cry of pain. Well, I guess he can pretend to do that, can't he? But I don't suppose it'll last very long.
What he can do is change the team around him. So if he's aware enough that it's going wrong, which I doubt he is actually yet, but I think he needs to change. He needs a far better whipping system. And it's extraordinary that he had no idea how bad the rebellion was going to be. And he needs good people around him, and then they can contain it. The problem is he does like having a chaotic kind of dysfunctional system around him, because that's where he feels he thrives best. So he's got to understand that if he's got any chance at all, he's going to have to stop that and become much more efficient and organised, really, but around him. He doesn't have to do it personally, but he does have to have a team around him to do.
But I think one of the significant things about the rebellion is that Boris had actually tried, he'd actually called a lot of the people himself, hadn't he? And he had sort of done the rounds of the tea room, and he'd made much more of an effort than he normally does.
And even when he was 22 yesterday afternoon,
he made it a personal plea, and they said, "Yeah, okay, it's a personal plea, and we reject it." So that's.
But he
that's
knew
why
they could. I mean, I think they were actually just very lucky that they had Labour voting with him, but not Boris wasn't lucky that they did. But actually, I think he was unlucky that they did, because they knew that they could do it as a rebellion, and it wasn't going to make any difference. If Labour had said that they were going to vote the other way, then I think most of the rebels would have thought, well, we can't do this, because actually, then, you know, it's going to be a catastrophe.
Sure.
So in a way, it was a cheap vote for them. It's not a good message for the country.
No, but it still shows the depth of the unease in the party. I mean, 26 newly elected MPs, one of whom, 26 of them elected in 2019, voted against the government, and the person who won 12 days ago voted against the government. So that's, it's a party that is not happy with its government, essentially.
Okay, let's try and put a slightly counterpoint. I mean, you slightly touched on there, Alice, that this was basically a free rebellion in that Labour had already said that they were going to back it. So if MPs are getting a bit of grief locally from their, you know, local memberships or whatever, and they're not happy with COVID passes, and actually there does seem to be a real question as to whether or not they work, then you get to rebel. It has no consequence. But Boris Johnson still gets what he wants. We carry on as the new year. And actually the public support what Boris Johnson's doing, even if his own MPs aren't. So is it that... This is partly why I'm not wholly convinced, and I tend to be proved wrong. But part of the reason why I'm not wholly convinced that Boris Johnson is actually in much peril, as some suggest, is that the people who want him out in his party want him out because he's imposing COVID rules which they think are too strict. And the people who want him out in the public want him out because they think he hasn't been sticking to the rules and they want stricter rules. And unless those two things align, it doesn't seem likely that he's in real peril. Or am I oversimplifying?
I think there are some people who are his backbenchers and even some of his ministers who felt strongly that they had to send the right message to the country about the new variant and about COVID, so weren't prepared to vote against Boris Johnson, but actually will not support him very happily at all at the moment. And many of them are, you know, all the MPs that I have talked to are really dissatisfied, and also they just don't have any loyalty to him. I mean, the idea of Boris going around the tea rooms and, you know, getting everyone to vote for him, that's just gone. They just don't care. They never did have much. You know, he's always been just a winning machine, and I think actually that's now showing that. And that's what I would be most worried about if I were him, is that he has absolutely no one behind him. There isn't a sort of team Boris.
In a way, it's, I mean, you're right, Matt, in that it's a free rebellion in terms of the of what measures they do or don't do with COVID. But I still think it's highly significant that even though you might say it's cheapened by the fact they knew that they would lose, 100 of his backbenchers, almost half of the non-governmental Tory MPs voted against him. That's got to be significant. It doesn't mean he's going to go tomorrow, but it means he's seriously wounded. And given that he can't change, and given that there'll be another cock-up along before too long, another revelation of some sort, then he's in trouble.
And the by-election. There's too many issues going on, aren't there, for him? And he's just doesn't have any sense of being in control of any of it.
And you're looking at 5% inflation and the HS2, I mean, the actual sort of serious day-to-day politics. I mean, non-pandemic politics, 5% inflation, HS2 fiasco, social care fiasco, the government behaving, the levelling up agenda, which I don't think a lot of Conservatives did not become Conservative MPs to talk about levelling up. I think that's it's all. I can, you know, they're deeply unhappy.
And I suppose that's the thing. I suppose actually the test of do they want to speak to him in the tea room, Alice, is quite a good one, because Boris Johnson was essentially a celebrity politician. And actually having a photo with him, having a laugh, telling your friends that you've just had a chat with Boris was all quite exciting. The same thing that actually happened to Theresa May, that suddenly people didn't really want to go to the number 10 drinks or whatever it might be, because there's not a cachet from, you know, if he's an election winner and he's great fun and the country love him, then you want to align yourself with him. And suddenly he's not those things. And it's just the question of whether or not, I mean, I suspect from his point of view, the Christmas break cannot come soon enough.
No.
Well, exactly. The other thing is, though, I've always felt with Boris, having worked with him quite a long time, that actually if everything's going his way and it's all jovial and jolly, and as you say, he's a celebrity and people notice him walking down the street, that's great. If it's not going his way and everything feels a bit rubbish, he is terrible when his back is against the wall. He just doesn't like it. He quite often lashes out. And I think that's going to be a problem for him, that there will be a moment when, if he does, in a way it's almost better for him if he doesn't realise the extent to which he is disliked. Because once he does, he can be very difficult. And I think he's a much better place, really, when he's just playing the clown.
And those Tory MPs will be looking at the polls turned last week, didn't they, for the first time, really. He'd got away with it for months on end. And then suddenly there's a 7, 8, 9 point gap. And they will be looking. They're just making a calculation about can he win us the next election. That's all they're doing. Labour, it would be very, very hard pushed to form a majority the next election. I'm not sure it can be done cephalogically, but there'll be 50, 60, 70, 80 Tory MPs who are thinking, I could lose my seat here, even if Labour don't form get a majority. So they're making the calculation: is Boris going to help my chances, or is he going to hinder them?
And as Robert said, it's the younger ones as well. The worrying thing for him is that the ones who should be most loyal, who should be thinking, well, in 5 years' time, I want to be a minister, and if Boris Johnson's there, I need to behave. They're obviously, looking at it, they're taking the temperature and thinking, well, he's not going to be here for much longer, so it doesn't make any difference if I rebel.
It's the flip side of, electing Bolshy people in the North and Midlands. everyone, the Tories were saying, oh, these are, this is great. They're all new sorts of Tories, wonderful, working class, trade unionists, all the rest of it. But maybe they just haven't got the respect for the leader that a more traditional kind of Shire Tory might have. And they're saying, well, we don't particularly, we're grateful for this guy for getting us in, but we don't particularly personally warm to him.
Yeah, and that's a big question for me. Very briefly, so I want to touch on both your comments because they're both so good. Alice, you've written today about being pregnant during the pandemic. Not you personally.
Yes, I came back, not me personally, sadly. But I came back from work on Monday, and there was this incredible queue going over Westminster Bridge. And there was this woman who was obviously very pregnant with her partner standing there. And it did look like a scene out of the Nativity, partly because it was almost dark and it was raining. And she just looked exhausted. And she'd been in this queue, obviously, for hours. And I just suddenly thought, why is she not at the front? And I looked it up, and they are the only vulnerable group who have not been given priority for boosters. And if you have your child until this week under 40, which is the majority, vast majority of women who are pregnant under 40, you weren't allowed to get your booster. And that just seems outrageous, because we already know that we've had over 600 stillbirths in the last year from pregnant women who had COVID, who were in hospital, who went into labour early. And then, we've had deaths from COVID of pregnant women. A fifth of the people who are in intensive care are pregnant women, and most of them didn't get inoculated. And you can say that's incredibly, irresponsible of them. But they were told often by their GPs and healthcare workers and all the pamphlets that said until June that they shouldn't be getting the jab. So now they're trying to catch up, and I think they should be given every help they can, because I think it's very, very scary for them.
Well, there was a serious column that you've written, Alice. Robert, you've written about the jobs that people are most likely to have affairs in.
Serious as well.
You thought it was going to be teachers, but it's not teachers.
That was based on my own experience at school in the 1970s, when if you, as a 12-year-old, suspected two teachers were having an affair, you were almost always proved right. but it's not teachers. They've obviously now...
All politicians.
They now behave themselves, all politicians, or even journalists. Yeah. It's the police. This is extraordinary. And this is only people who admit to it. 44% of police officers admit to having had an affair with a colleague. That's nearly half, and that's only the ones who are owning up.
And that's affairs rather than getting married to someone or having a relationship. I think they must have made that. It. I think that they just all, maybe it's the thing in the police to have had an affair and you feel you have to say it.
Oh, right. It's like peer pressure.
It's a cultural thing.
Yeah, like back at school. Maybe. Yeah.
Clod pressure.
14-year-old boys at school going, oh, yes, yes, you know.
Maybe.
Take actually, down your particulars.
Oh, no, I used, you just nicked my gag. I used that in my column.
I know.
And surely just shamelessly nicked it.
Well, I'm not sure.
I'm not sure it's a particularly
original.
No, it really, no.
Can I say
that
very
is perfectly
quickly
true.
That Robert has also done his column, which he keeps doing, because I go into work and I have a particular leather skirt that I really like, and Robert has always, always repeated the mantra that he hates leather skirts.
No, there
which
was
I think it's now a personal vendetta against me.
It was sequins. Yeah, it was sequins this week.
Yes, but I've never worn sequins, so that's okay. Uh-huh. But he did drop in the leather skirt again.
If Robert doesn't want to wear a leather skirt, that is his own business.
Exactly. They don't suit me.
That's, you know, if you're not going to wear it, you're not going to have any affairs in the office. That's the only thing.
No. Maybe I should dress up as a policeman.
Yeah, it's all very staid at the times, I have to tell you. Unless I'm being completely kept out of the loop.
I think that's probably a conversation not to have on air. Robert Crampton and Alice Thompson there. And of course, you can read them both in The Times every week. Just get yourself a subscription. Go to thetimes.co.uk/timeswebbox. Up next is PMQ's Unpacked.
Ryan Reynolds here from Mint Mobile. With the price of just about everything going up during inflation, we thought we'd bring our prices down. So to help us, we brought in a reverse auctioneer, which is apparently a thing.
Mint Mobile Unlimited Premium Wireless. How to get 30, 30, how to get 30, how to get 20, 20, 20, how to get 20, 20, how to get 15, 15, 15, 15, just $15 a month? Sold!
Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
$45 up front for 3 months plus taxes and fees. Promo rate for new customers for limited time. Unlimited more than 40 gigabytes per month. Slows full terms at mintmobile.com.
Tired of ads barging into your favorite news podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Stay up to date on everything newsworthy by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/newsadfree. That's amazon.com/newsadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
Off Air, the podcast. With Jane Garvey and Fee Glover.
I go to the sink and I have some cheese.
You eat cheese in the sink?
Doesn't everybody?
Every Monday to Thursday, Jane and Fee keep the microphones on after their Times radio show.
I think if we were to do a Mr. and Mrs.
Oh, no.
How would that go in the booth?
Badly. It would go very badly.
Unencumbered and off air.
Two tiny women with gobs.
Off Air, the podcast. Now available on the Times radio app.
You're listening to the Red Box Podcast. Now it's time for this.
PMQs Unpacked on Times Radio. Unpacking the politics and cutting through the crossfire.
Order, order. I call Matt Chorley and Patrick Maguire. Yeah!
Yes, it's the last PMQs Unpacked of 2021, where we pause the action live from the House of Commons to analyse in real time what's going on between Boris Johnson and Keir Starmer. Patrick Maguire, Times Red Box editor, is with me. Patrick, I won't mention the conversation we had 2 weeks ago, where we were not wholly convinced that this number 10 party business was a story which had legs. Instead, let's focus on what we think might come up in this end of term ding dong between Boris Johnson and Keir Starmer.
Well, you know, usually you might put Forrest Gump on if you were a teacher trying to hold the attention of your sort of D mob happy class. But, you know, to stretch this metaphor beyond the bounds of reasonable taste, given the news, I think, you know, Chris Whitty and Jenny Harries have put on a horror movie, and the two prefects in Keir Starmer and Boris Johnson will talk almost exclusively about Omicron, I should think.
And looking at the live feed from the House of Commons, Boris Johnson just answering a backbench question, it's pretty busy. I mean, given that, I mean, COVID has whipped through the parliamentary lobby, most the journalists seem to have got it, lots of MPs seem to have had it. It's a bit weird, isn't it, as a message to send? I mean, I suppose it's because if you want to be there and ask a question, you've got to do it in person because you can't do it remotely. But while everyone else seems to be cancelling their plans, the Commons absolutely, you know, it's a cheek by jowl.
Yeah, I have to say, I'm pretty surprised, actually, given that, you know, three members, I think, of Sakir's shadow cabinet have all tested positive for COVID. Sir Ed Davey, who might, you think, have wanted to get a little questioning before the North Shropshire by-election tomorrow, has also tested positive. But as you say, in the absence of rules allowing virtual participation, MPs are in a pretty invidious position. I mean, it's not quite a packed house, but it's perhaps busier than you'd expect of a legislature at the epicentre of the Omicron outbreak.
Yeah, it's a bit thinner down the SNP end from what we could see on the Green benches, and down on the sort of the far end on the Tory bench is a bit thinner. But behind both Boris Johnson and Keir Starmer, it's pretty busy. Well, here we go then. The last PMQs unpacked of 2021. Question one from the Labour leader, Keir Starmer.
Position, Keir Starmer.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. Can I also wish you, everybody works in this House, and all members, a Merry Christmas and a Happy New Year. And can I also send my congratulations to the Prime Minister and his wife on the birth of their daughter? Yeah. And join the Prime Minister in supporting our armed forces and all those on the front line. Mr. Speaker, there were 200,000 Omicron infections on Monday. That's doubling every two or three days, and the NHS could be overwhelmed. So I want to start by encouraging everyone listening to this session to get their jabs and boosters. Yeah. It's the best way to protect themselves, the NHS and their loved ones. Yeah. Given the seriousness of the situation, does the Prime Minister agree that the 100 Conservative members who voted against Plan B measures last night voted against steps which are necessary to protect the NHS and to protect lives?
Yeah. Thank you, Mr. Speaker. The government is taking a balanced and a proportionate approach to dealing with the pandemic, and the House voted through Plan B, I think, with Conservative votes, Mr. Speaker, and we will continue with the massive booster rollout, to which he is a late convert. Since Friday, when I decided that we had to accelerate the booster programme in view of the data about Omicron, we've cut the timetable in half, Mr. Speaker. Monday was the biggest vaccination Monday in the history of this country, and yesterday was the second biggest vaccination achievement by the NHS ever. More than 500,000 jabs delivered, and the campaign continues to grow. I want to thank absolutely everybody involved. I want to thank all the British public for coming forward to get boosted now.
Okay, let's just pause it there. I mean, it was quite smart by Keir Starmer there, Patrick Maguire, by trying to sort of separate Boris Johnson from his own rebels, get him to condemn them. I mean, he quite carefully avoided doing that. Instead, hailing the biggest vaccination Monday this country's ever seen.
Yeah, vaccination Mondays. Great band, weren't they? But I thought that was a really well-pitched question from Keir Starmer. Actually, obviously didn't get the answer he wanted, but it illustrates Boris Johnson's key political difficulty, right? He's stuck between the rock of opposition from, almost half of his own backbenchers and the hard place of having to rely on Labour to get through further public health measures. And when he comes back to the Commons, and I think we can safely predict it will be a when, be it over the Christmas break or in January, saying, we need to tighten this restriction or introduce this new measure to slow the spread, he will face that calculation again. And it's very shrewd politics from Sir Keir Starmer, because obviously on the broadcast round this morning, we've heard MP after MP saying, oh, you know, it's not necessarily about Boris Johnson, it's about public health measures. But there is clearly a wedge to be pushed between the front bench of the government side and those back benches. And I suspect Keir Starmer will continue to do that.
It's interesting. It's a slightly different tone from Keir Starmer, because in the media clips last night, he was accusing Boris Johnson of a failure of leadership, even though Boris Johnson had forced through what Keir Starmer wanted to do in the face of his own MP. So he's clearly decided now, side with Boris Johnson, create that wedge with the backbenchers. Let's go back then. This is question two. It's PMQ's unpacked. It's question two from Keir Starmer.
Mr. Speaker, we all hope that combined with the booster programme, Plan B will be sufficient to prevent the NHS from being overwhelmed. Nobody wants to see further restrictions. But the Prime Minister has quite rightly not ruled anything out. So can I take this opportunity to make clear to the Prime Minister that if further votes are needed to save lives and protect the NHS, Labour MPs will follow my leadership and we will always put the national interest first. Can I ask the Prime Minister to get his house in order so he can say the same about the members behind him?
Yes, Mr. Speaker, if further measures are needed, as the House will understand, if further regulation is needed, of course this House will have a further say. As for following his leadership, Mr. Speaker, they wibbled-wobbled over Plan B, they wibble-wobbled over quarantine, and if we'd listened to him, Mr. Speaker, we wouldn't even have the vaccine rollout, because we would have remained in the European Medicines Agency. And we wouldn't have opened up on July the 19th, Mr. Speaker. We would have remained in lockdown. That's the reality, Mr. Speaker.
I think, and that was me beginning to think I'd never hear that line again.
I think that might be a record, to get a reference to we'd still be in the European Medicines Agency in response to question two. That either means that Boris Johnson has got some Christmas crackers lined up for us, or he's already panicking and flannelling. Wibble wobbled is a new one. We normally get vaccinate and vacillate. Here's an interesting question, Patrick McGuire. Trivia question. Who is the only party leader to suffer a frontbench resignation as a result of the vote last night?
Sir Keir Starmer, of course. Rachel Maskell, the shadow minister, resigned rather than vote through mandatory jobs for care workers, which is a big bugbear of... I was going to say Sir Keir Starmer's union allies. I don't think they're quite his allies, but you know, Labour's union affiliates were opposed to that, and she is aligned with the left. But it's interesting, you know, we haven't heard anything about that, quite obviously, because of the 100 government rebellions. And I thought Keir Starmer's question there, one, the Tony striking industry, right? It's statesmanlike. It's, you know, it's almost like he's assuming the moral authority to lecture Boris Johnson. You got that in his televised address the other night. The second thing is, in front-loading his question with one first question, reminding the Tory benches that Labour voted those through, two, saying to the Tory benches that in the event of another parliamentary vote, which Boris Johnson has to promise, that Labour votes will carry the day again, he is ramping up the chances of another rebellion, because as Professor Philip Cowley of Queen Mary, the expert on parliamentary rebellions, wrote in Times Red Box this morning, you know, There is no greater license for a Tory MP to rebel if they know whatever measure is going to pass anyway. So, you know, there are plenty of MPs who hate Boris who voted against this measure yesterday because they knew it would pass. So, you know, he's really punching the bruise here, Sir Keir Starmer.
Yeah, and we'll see. If he continues to do so. As we go back to the House of Commons, then, Patrick McGuire, this is question three from Keir Starmer.
Mr. Speaker, let me put that straight back in its box. The Labour Party showed the leadership yesterday that the Prime Minister lacked. Mr. Speaker, if it wasn't for Labour votes, his government wouldn't have been able to introduce vital health measures we need to save lives and protect the NHS. So weak is his leadership. His own MPs were wrong to vote against basic public health measures. But I can understand why they're angry with him. After all, the Health Secretary said this summer that relaxations of restrictions were irreversible. They weren't. Only last week, the government...
Order. I've been tempted by both of you a little bit too much. Think it's Christmas. That's the only reason you're going to remain.
Mr. Speaker, only last week the government was saying Plan B measures were not required. They are. Just like the rail revolution for the North. No one will have to sell their homes for social care. Just like no tax rises. It's overpromise after overpromise until reality catches up. Does the Prime Minister understand why his own MPs no longer trust him?
Mr. Speaker, you know, there he goes again. He comes to this House pompously claiming that he wants to rise above party politics and support the efforts of the nation in delivering the vaccine rollout. And then he talks endlessly about party politics and plays political games. I think what the people of this country can see is as a result of what this government has done, with the decisions we've taken, the tough decisions that we've taken to deliver the... which he ducked, Mr Speaker, to deliver the fastest vaccine rollout in Europe and now the fastest booster rollout. We now have, Mr Speaker, the fastest growing economy in the G7, and more jobs today, 500,000 more jobs today than there were when the pandemic began. That is Conservative government in action, Mr Speaker. We deliver, they complain.
We deliver, they complain is not a very rousing slogan, Patrick McGuire. He's boasted there about the fastest growing this and that. He's got the fastest growing rebellion on his hand. I hadn't clocked this. So we thought there were 99 rebels last night. That went up to 100. The Commons vote list has been amended, so it's now up to 101. So 99 votes against and two tellers who count the votes in. Keir Starmer, I felt that last question was slightly more confused. To accuse Boris Johnson of not showing leadership, I mean, there's a question of why he hasn't taken his own MPs with it, but he has done what Keir Starmer wanted. And so doing what's right in the eyes of the country and the opposition, rather than placating his own MPs, that is showing a degree of leadership, you could argue. But then again, trying to highlight, he disagrees with the Tory MPs, but he can understand why they don't trust Boris Johnson. It's a slightly, I don't know, mixed message that he's now putting forward.
Yeah, it is a slightly all things to all people line of argument, isn't it? You know, he's at once saying these Tory MPs are, you know, being completely irresponsible, endangering public health, but also saying they are almost prisoners of conscience who are more than entitled to rise up against such a shameless and hopeless Prime Minister. But, you know, regardless, it's an attack that will sting. And the problem for Boris Johnson is it's all very well and good talking about playing politics, but the fact is it's the Conservative Party that in the eyes of the public and indeed in, you know, in the eyes of its own MPs that is hopelessly divided and is, you know, you may well argue playing politics with public health at, you know, the time when cool heads and leadership is needed most acutely. So, yeah, sure, Keir Starmer's line is, you know, slightly confused logically, but, you know, as sort of guess his prerogative when his opposition is so hopelessly divided.
Yeah, and when, you know, Boris Johnson's line is not particularly clear either. We should point out, if you're not watching along live on the telly, but I think it's fair to say Boris Johnson's hair is probably its sort of cheap Boris Johnson impressionist wig. Stage. It looks particularly wild today. I don't know what that means.
I think it's what you might call a half fabricant or it's not quite the full gummage, but it's definitely a half fabricant.
Not quite the full gummage. Very good. Right, we go back to the House of Commons there. We continue PMQ's Unpacked. Matt Chorley with Patrick McGuire, the Times Red Box editor. Let's have question four from Keir Starmer.
Mr Speaker, the only person undermining public confidence is sitting right there. Yeah. Here's the problem. His MPs are wrong to vote against basic public health measures, but they are not wrong to distrust him. Last week, the Conservative member for the Forest of Dean asked, why should people at home listening to the Prime Minister do things that people working in Downing Street are not prepared to do? Tory MP. The Conservative member for Shipley last week asked the Prime Minister, can he give me any reason at all why I shouldn't tell my constituents to treat these rules the same way that Downing Street treated these rules last year? Now, the Prime Minister's had a week to come up with a good answer. Has he done so?
Mr Speaker, the answer is very, very clear, and it's there in what the public are doing, Mr Speaker, because they can see that the government is getting on with delivering on their priorities, not just on the economy, Mr Speaker, but above all on delivering the fastest booster rollout in Europe. And, you know, he's fond of these European comparisons, Mr Speaker, but we've done almost double the percentage of any other European country. We've boosted 86% of the over 80s in this country, 91% of those aged 75 to 79. That is an astonishing achievement, and I think that is what the people of this country are focused on, Mr. Speaker. And rather than the partisan trivia that he continually raises, when frankly, he has a case to answer himself.
Well, I'm not sure Keir Starmer mentioned European comparisons there at all, although I have to say I'm not totally sure what Keir Starmer's question was. He was quoted, the Forest of Dean MP's Mark Harper, who we heard from on Times Radio a little earlier, and the Shipley MP's Philip Davis, both no fans of the Johnson regime. We should point out that sitting directly next to Boris Johnson's left is Liz Truss, who is studying him with narrowed eyes, I think it's fair to say, very, very closely. Maybe she's wondering what she might be saying if she was at the dispatch box instead of him at PMQs.
Well, at this rate, she will be in a fortnight's time, but anyway.
Well, that's going to be my question, Patrick Wright. Are we discovering anything from this exchange at PMQs which either shores up Boris Johnson's position or exposes him his fragility?
Well, the risky thing for Boris Johnson, you know, it was slightly surreal to hear Keir Starmer approvingly quote, lockdown sceptic in chief Mark Harper and, the honourable member for, the 1950s, Philip Davies, right? And that's not something Keir Starmer usually does. But in ventriloquising him and asking the questions of the Prime Minister that they asked, he exposed the fact that he doesn't have an answer, much like before when he was asking his second question about, volunteering Labour votes for their next division. All Boris Johnson can say is, you'll get a vote. There is clearly no substantive grounds on which he is either willing to engage or can engage with his MPs. And that's a very risky position to be in, particularly when you have dispossessed MPs like Mark Harper, a former cabinet minister, and, you know, never possessed malcontents like Philip Davies, who is a maverick backbencher who, you know, will not be bought or sold in political terms. It's a very risky position to be in.
Yeah, well, I always think once a politician is accusing another politician of playing politics, then, you know, they are thrashing around. They are the ones doing the wibbly wobbling. Right, we've got two more questions to go. Let's see if, because both of them will want to give their backbenchers something to cheer themselves with as they head off for Christmas. So we've got two more. This is question five from Keir Starmer.
I think that's no, he hasn't come up with a good answer. For weeks now, he claims that no rules were broken. He claims he didn't know what was happening in his own house last Christmas. I don't believe him. His MPs don't believe him, and nor do the British public. He's taking the public for fools, and it's becoming dangerous. Because from today, anyone who tests positive for coronavirus faces a second Christmas in isolation. It will be heartbreaking for families across the country. The message from the government has to be, we know that following the rules won't be easy this Christmas, but it is necessary. Can the Prime Minister not see that he has no hope of regaining the moral authority to deliver that difficult message if he cannot be straight with the British public about the rule-breaking in Downing Street last Christmas?
Mr. Speaker, I've repeatedly answered that question before, and as he knows, a report is being delivered to me by the Cabinet Secretary into exactly what went on. He might explain why there are pictures of him quaffing beer, Mr. Speaker. I think what the British public want us all to do, frankly, and what they want us all to do is focus on the matter in hand and continue to deliver the vaccine rollout in the way that we are. And I think it is an absolutely fantastic thing that people are now coming forward in the way that we are, the way that they are. 45% of people over 18 have now had a vaccine, Mr. Speaker. And I thank our amazing staff. I thank the NHS. I thank all the GPs. I thank the GPs. And we are. Well, you blocked the investment in there. They wouldn't vote for it. They wouldn't vote for investment. investment in our NHS, Mr. Speaker. They wouldn't do it. I thank them for what they're doing. I can tell the House that we're now speeding things up by allowing people to avoid the 15-minute delay after they've been vaccinated, which I hope will encourage even more people to come forward.
That was the penultimate exchange at PMQs. Patrick, I'm not totally... I've just had a quick Google during that. The pictures of Keir Starmer drinking beer, is this when he was he went to a brewery in Wrexham back in, when was this, April? And he had a pint of beer at the brewery despite pubs being in lockdown. So that, I think that's the criticism. Why was he drinking a pint of beer when the pubs were shut, but it wasn't a brewery? The organisation of revelries in which I'm not sure either party could claim to be expert.
You know, recent weeks, Matt, have taught us that we can occasionally be a bit too hasty when we have these discussions about predicting which line or which bar will have the fable cut through. But I'm pretty certain that neither of us will lose much money or pride betting on that line from Boris Johnson not cutting through, because like you, I have no idea what it's all about. Nor did we learn much from that exchange beyond Keir Starmer articulating in his own words what he's trying to do, i.e. assume the moral authority to present Labour as a government in waiting, which is a phrase he used on a Zoom call with front benchers yesterday, you know, talking and, you know, moral authority, indeed, the phrase I used earlier in this exchange. So for once, the Labour leader's office are listening to me.
Here's a big question, and we've got the last question coming up, so maybe he's been holding it. But Keir Starmer's not gone hard on the Zoom quiz photo, which clearly seems to fly in the face of the suggestion that Boris Johnson did not know that there was some form of staff gathering. The fact that there seems to be, according to the papers today, instructions issued on how to take part in the quiz in number 10. At the very least, there's some good jokes to be had about the pub quiz names or whatever it might be. Actually, he seems to have eased off. He's sort of made oblique references to the lack of trust and the promise, and so on. But he hasn't really gone hard on the thing that everyone else has been talking about this week, which is those photos.
Well, I wonder if the judgment the Labour Party has made, and as you say, given that it's all the public have been talking about, it's perhaps a risky judgment call, is that the debate has moved on, that serious times demand a more serious tone. And, then arguably Keir Starmer really would be playing politics at a juncture that the government's chief scientific advisors all say is the most terrifying yet in the pandemic, if he went large on the fact that the Mirror have named the quiz teams today and asking which one of them the Prime Minister would condemn or condone, right? I think, coming up to those two words, moral authority, it's about presenting Labour as an organised, serious alternative government. And frivolities and frippery, such as the number 10 quiz, you know, the political point has been made there.
And I suppose the big difference is they got a lot of criticism in the Labour Party for constantly banging on about wallpaper previously. And so if he's just, well, if everyone else is talking, everyone knows about the quiz, I don't need to put up in lights. I can take a step back and, you know, like I said, rise above it a bit, rather than being accused of banging on about the quiz, you know, something that happened a year ago. Well, but here we go then. We might be wrong. Maybe he's going to bring up some quiz jokes now. This will be a big moment. This is the moment that both lots of MPs go off for the Christmas break. Who is sending their party off with a spring in their step? And who's going off to start plotting against their leaders? Both of whom are facing with that. Angela Rayner sitting next to Keir Starmer. Liz Truss sitting next to Boris Johnson. Who's going to come out on top? Who's going to get the best social media clip? This is question number 6. The last question at PMQs from Keir Starmer of 2021. Here we go.
Mr. Speaker, the virus is spreading once again and lives and livelihoods are at risk. The British public are looking for a Prime Minister with the trust and the authority to lead Britain through the crisis. Instead, we're burdened with the worst possible Prime Minister at the worst possible time. They're shouting now. Where were they in the lobby last night? His own MPs have had enough. They won't defend him. They won't turn up to support him. And if he proposes them, they won't vote for basic public health measures. So at this time of national effort, the Labour Party stood up, shown the leadership that the Prime Minister can't and put the health and security of the British people first.
Odd. This is silly because I can't hear the question. I will hear the question. I don't think we need any more help from this front bench. I'm just dealing with this corner first before I come back. Can I just say, I understand it's the last PMQs and we're going to be coming back in the new year, but I do need to hear the question. And it may take a long time, but I will hear it. So please, I want to get through questions. I want you all to get away for Christmas. At this stage, you won't. Mr. Starmer.
Mr. Speaker, the Prime Minister is so weak that without Labour votes last night, vital public health measures wouldn't have got through. But this country can't... says it's not true. Oh, God. It's not true. That... he's so socially distant from the truth. He thinks that that's not true. I don't know where to... We better press on. We can't go on with a Prime Minister who's too weak to lead. So will the Prime Minister take time this Christmas to look in the mirror and ask himself whether he has the trust and authority to lead this country?
Mr. Speaker, thank you very much, Mr. Speaker. We won that vote last night with Conservative votes, as I told the House. I respect the feelings and I respect the anxieties that colleagues have about... Of course I do. I respect and understand the anxieties, the legitimate anxieties that colleagues have about restrictions on their liberty, but I believe, and on the liberty of people, but I believe that the approach that we're taking is balanced and proportionate and right for this country. And let me tell you, Mr. Speaker, let me tell the House about some of the... He talks about leadership, some of the decisions, the tough decisions that I've had to take. I had to decide to stay out of the European ventilator scheme so we had our own ventilator chance, which he then ridiculously attacked. I decided to go ahead of the rest of Europe, with the vaccine rollout, Mr. Speaker, which would have been impossible if we'd listened to him. I decided to go ahead with opening up our society and our economy on July the 19th, which he opposed, Mr. Speaker, which he opposed. And frankly, if we'd listened to him, never forget, we would not now have the fastest economic growth of the G7. It's because we took those courageous steps, Mr. Speaker, that we now have 500,000 more people in work now than there were when the pandemic began. And yesterday I saw 1.2 million job vacancies, Mr. Speaker. That is what Conservative governments do. They create employment. They create business opportunities. And above all, Mr. Speaker, we vaccinate, they vacillate. They jabber. We jab. They play party politics, Mr. Speaker, and we get on with the job.
They play party politics. We have Christmas parties, would have been a better way of finishing off. Now, I thought Keir Starmer would be kicking himself there, Patrick Maguire, because he was building up his big peroration and then Lindsay Hoyle interrupted it.
To remind... the class not to touch the lathe to return to an earlier.
As it's Christmas, Patrick, give us another don't touch the lathe.
Don't touch the lathe. Come on, I've told you. It's your own time you're wasting. Okay. Exactly. But that speaks to, the end of term jitters that are taking over the House. That monologue, that closing monologue from Boris Johnson made Kevin Keegan in 1998 look like a picture of composure. It was several hundred words in search of a point. No semblance of an argument. It was...
basically unprepared, actually. I mean, it was just a greatest hits. There was no... there was no new line of attack or new phrase or concession or anything. Just finally, Patrick, because I'm slightly conscious of the time. Keir Starmer asking Boris Johnson to look in the mirror this Christmas, dangerously close to telling him he should resign without actually doing it.
Yes, exactly. And But this is an ideal situation for the Labour Party. As long as the Conservative Party is divided and reliant on Sir Keir Starmer for the passage of key public health measures, there's no point in Keir Starmer being the one to tell Boris Johnson to resign. It actually suits the Labour Party to a T to have Tory MPs making that point implicitly.
Well, there we are. The end. The last PMQs unpacked of 2021. Boris Johnson and Keir Starmer going at it. I'm not sure we learnt a huge amount, apart from maybe a slightly tighter Keir Starmer operation. They've got a plan.
I think it's his best yet, actually. I think.
Yeah.
It's a lower bar, but.
Yeah, we'll see. We'll see how that pans out in the polls and so on. That's all we've got time for on this episode of the Red Box Podcast. Don't forget you can listen to me live Monday to Friday, 10 till 1 on Times Radio. And we bring you the best bits here on the podcast. And if you're feeling particularly nice, why not wait and review us wherever you get your podcast from?
Tired of ads barging into your favorite news podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Stay up to date on everything newsworthy by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/newsadfree. That's amazon.com/newsadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
I'm Manveen Rana from The Story, a daily news podcast from The Times. Join me and my co-host Luke Jones for a deep dive into the big stories and investigations. Plus, each month, William Hague hosts an agenda-setting interview with a key newsmaker or big thinker. That's The Story, The Times' daily podcast that brings you one remarkable story told in depth. Listen every weekday on the Times Radio app or wherever you get your podcasts.